Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know, even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I will be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now, the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So, if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Okay, today's podcast is titled Bruce's Beach Chess. Bruce's Beach Chess, Victimhood versus Winterhood, 619-768-2945. What my attempts today, at least, is we're going to take a look at the board game of chess and look how we can apply the rules of chess to everyday life, particularly with Bruce's Beach or Tulsa, Oklahoma, that green, you know, what do they call it, Black Wall Street. Because I believe if you have a chess mindset, you can use those same principles in chess and apply it to real life situations. So while I'm waiting for... here we go. So we're going to start off with a piece on victimhood, because today's podcast is titled Bruce's Beach Chess, Victimhood versus Winterhood.
We live in a very interesting time where we have, I think, a combination of the what's called expressive individualism, which is about the importance of me, my experience, what makes me happy. What we now have is something additional, and that is identity and tribal identifications, where we have, and I want to say there's a good part of this, for one thing, that we have historically marginalized groups, women and certainly in the workforce, in the public sphere, gay people, African Americans, other minorities. We've had a lot of folks who have been in the margins of power in our society who have said, this isn't working anymore. So these movements towards individual and group liberation have in net been very positive for our country. But we always tend to turn things towards a kind of individualistic focus. And now we have a culture in which there is competition for victimhood, and white men now, many white men are calling themselves victims. Victims of affirmative action, victims of the liberal left, okay? And you have religious groups who have tens of millions of people in this country who are victims of outsiders who want to destroy them, okay? So if what's happened then is, I think, this expressive individualism has been combined with the sort of the benefits of being in an oppressed group, you know, the moral high ground that comes with that, and the strong identification that comes with being in a victimized group. And now everybody's in a victimized group. After the Great Recession in the late in 2007-2008, bankers were the new victimized group. And so there's an unhealthy trend towards tribal competition for victim status in our country. And I want to go back and again say there is something to a victim. So this is hard to talk about without saying, okay, everybody should just get along and stop complaining. I'm not saying that at all. But there is something unhealthy. And what it keeps us from doing, this is my main problem with it. It keeps us from working across identity groups to solving the problems that we have together. Because all of our major problems related to poverty, to education, to healthcare, to the environment, just take any of our problems, they require cross-identity group coalitions to work on together. And when we divide into identity groups, we can't work across coalitions. Martin Luther King, just before he died, was working on poverty in a cross-racial coalition. He knew that the civil rights laws needed to be changed. There had to be a black leadership to change those Jim Crow laws. The next step was poverty, and poverty is not just racial. And he knew that you needed to have a broad coalition. That's going to be hard nowadays. Some are trying it, but that is much harder to do in an identity-based society.
Chess rules for kids and beginners. The chessboard is made up of 8 rows and 8 columns for a total of 64 squares of alternating colors. Each square of the chessboard is identified with a unique pair of a letter and a number. Both players sit opposite to each other. Make sure lighter-colored square should be in the bottom right-hand side for each player. Let's set up the board. At the beginning of the game, the pieces are arranged for each side. 1 king, 1 queen, 2 rooks, 2 bishops, 2 knights, and 8 pawns. Total, 16 pieces each side. Your queen should be the same color as the color of your square. White queen, for instance, on white or the lighter square, and the black queen on the black or darker square. Check and make sure each piece should be facing each other. The king across from the king, and the queen across from the queen. Chess moves. Each type of piece has its own method of movement. King. King can move exactly one square horizontally, vertically, or diagonally. Once in every game, each king is allowed to make a special move, known as castling. Queen. The queen is the most powerful piece of chess. Queen can move any number of vacant squares diagonally, horizontally, or vertically. Rook. or castle. Rook can move any number of vacant squares vertically or horizontally. Just to make it easy to understand, rook moves in a plus pattern. So rook can move any number of squares, up, right, left, or down. It also is moved while castling. Bishop. Bishop can move any number of vacant squares in any diagonal direction. Just to make it easy to understand, bishop moves in an X pattern, knight. Knight can move one square along any rank or file and then at an angle. The knight's movement can also be viewed as an L, or 7, laid out at any horizontal or vertical angle. Knight is the only piece that can jump over other pieces. For example, if there were any pieces right next to the knight can simply jump over these pieces and move. And if there is any piece on the square, the knight can simply capture that piece. Pawns. Pawns are the smallest, weakest pieces of chess. Pawns can move forward one square, if that square is unoccupied. If it has not yet moved, the pawn has the option of moving two squares forward, provided both squares in front of the pawn are unoccupied. A pawn cannot move backward. Pawns are the only pieces that capture differently from how they move. They can capture an enemy piece on either of the two spaces adjacent to the space in front of them, i.e. the two squares diagonally in front of them, but cannot move to these spaces if they are vacant. The pawn is also involved in the two special moves, en passant and promotion. Promotion. When a pawn reaches the other end of the board, it can be changed for any other piece of its own color, except the king. This is called pawn promotion. So a pawn can be promoted to a queen, rook, a bishop, or a knight. A pawn is promoted by removing the pawn from the board and replacing the chosen piece on the promotion square. En passant. It is a special type of capture that pawns can make under very specific circumstances. This pawn capture can occur immediately after a player moves a pawn two squares forward from its starting position, and an enemy pawn could have captured it had the same pawn moved only one square forward. The opponent captures the just-moved pawn as if taking it as it passes through the first square. The resulting position is the same as if the pawn had only moved one square forward and the enemy pawn had captured normally. The en passant capture must be done on the very next turn, or the right to do so is lost. Such a move is the only occasion in chess in which a piece captures but does not move to the square of the captured piece. Castling. At most once in every game, each king is allowed to make a special move, known as castling. When player moves his king two squares over to one side and then move the rook from that side right corner next to the king on the opposite side. For castling, a player must follow these few conditions. 1. It must be the king's first move. 2. It must be that rook's first move. 3. There shouldn't be any other pieces in between the king and rook. 4. The king shouldn't be in checkmate, nor pass through a checkmate. Let's start the game. The player who has the white pieces always starts a game of chess. Choose any of your pieces that is able to move and put it in its new space. Each turn consists of moving one piece, one time only. After the player with the white piece takes their turn, play alternates to the player with the black pieces. Capture your opponent's pieces. Capturing pieces means landing on the same space as an opponent's piece and removing them from the game. Try to capture your opponent's stronger pieces, like their queen, rooks, and bishops, to make their turns less powerful. What is checkmate? The ultimate aim in the game chess is delivering a checkmate, trapping your opponent's king. Checkmate happens when a king is placed in check and there is no legal move to escape. When this happens, say checkmate out loud to declare the end of the game. Let your opponent double check if they can make a move before declaring yourself the winner. How to win the game. Checkmate ends the game, and the side whose king was checkmated loses. Games may also end in a draw if neither player can force a checkmate, such as if the kings are the only pieces left on the board. there are a few rules for a draw. If there are enough pieces on the board to force a checkmate, for example, a king and a bishop versus a king. If the same exact position is repeated three times, this is not necessarily three times in a row, 50 consecutive moves have been played while neither player has moved a pawn or captured any piece. If a player's turn is to move, he is not in check but has no legal moves. This situation is called stalemate, and it ends the game in a draw. If you found this video helpful, please subscribe on our YouTube channel and follow future videos as well. And click on the bell icon to activate notifications when new and exciting videos are uploaded. Thank you for watching this video.
And today's podcast is titled Bruce's Beach Chess. And this is something that we're going to start to organize as an offline as well as an online event, using the game of chess to teach some real-life lessons, study history and some real-life, real-time lessons using the game of chess. So today's podcast is titled Bruce's Beach Chess, Victimhood versus Winnerhood. Now, in the first audio we played, as the narrator said in that audio, everybody, or almost everybody now, including white folks, including bankers at one time or another, put on play the victimhood piece. Think of this, we're thinking in chess terminology today. Okay. Now, the next audio we're going to play will be dealing with the chess board. And the reason why we're going to play this audio is chess board represents the landscape of the game. Now, let me relate this to a real-life event that happened in 1921. The Black Wall Street, when they had their riots here. And once again, today's podcast is titled Bruce's Beach Chess, Victimhood versus Winnerhood. So the first thing that you need to become aware of and learn in the game of chess, as well as in real life, the landscape. What's the board look like? What's the landscape look like? Now, a lot of people that bring up Black Wall Street, they come at it, in my opinion, from a victimhood point of view because they don't know the landscape, particularly the landscape of that era. Now, for instance, when somebody says, black folks built this up and they took it away from it, they always take it from it. Let's look at, once again, let's put on our chess hats, our thinking caps. Let's look at the landscape. Now, that took place in the state of Oklahoma. In Oklahoma at that same time, looking at the landscape, looking at the chessboard of that day, of that era, there were 50 other black municipalities. And if we include communities, it were more than that. But there were 50, this is documented, 50 black communities. Actually, and you add in, let's say, Black Wall Street, there were 51. 50 of those municipalities have never been touched by any type of racial violence, riot, violence, anything like that. What's the distinction between those 50? Now, once again, we're looking at the chessboard. That's the first thing that you've got to learn. What is the landscape? Well, the 50 municipalities, all black, those 50 municipalities set up they bought their own land, acres of it. They bought their own land and started their own municipalities. never touched by racial violence, never attacked or approached by the Ku Klux Klan. However, the Greenwood District at that time, also known as Black Wall Street, what they did is they didn't set up on the board like the other towns set up on the board. They set up in hostile territory. That's the first mistake they made. We're going to go on audio on the chess board, because if you don't know the board and you're playing against somebody, matter of fact, if you don't know the board, you automatically have put on the victimhood hat. It's just automatic. If you go into a game and do not know the landscape, you do not know the board, you have automatically yourself, not nobody else, have put on the victimhood hat.
And I think in many ways it's the same with chess, that you have this pattern recognition, you have a lot of analysis going on, and you are presented to the result, but you don't really know how you reached the result.
It's like learning a language with chess, that you, whether others hear or see chaos, you see clear lines and you see pattern.
It is a pattern that has to be recognized by your brain. And if it doesn't get the cues, you cannot see it properly. But you have a great ability to remember. So you can remember a lot of chess games, a lot of positions, a lot of specific materials.
What's up, guys? Nelson Dellis here, and in today's video, we are going to learn how to memorize an entire chessboard. You ready? Let's go. All right, guys, welcome, and thank you for watching this video. I hope you liked that intro, a little different, something out of the norm, a little over the top, since this is about something so grand as chess. And what I thought I'd do in this video is teach you, anybody, whether you know chess well or you don't, how to memorize all the pieces on a chessboard. So an 8x8 regular chessboard and 32 pieces, both black and white, spread out randomly across this board. How to remember where they are, take them off, and place them back in the same spot. Now, before we get started, a couple little notes I should get out there. One is that I'm no chess expert. I like to play chess, I'm pretty good at it. I wouldn't consider myself great by any means, nor am I rated or anything like that. So I'm approaching this from the perspective of a memory champion, not a chess champion. Let's get that clear. The second point I'd like to bring up is I know that memorizing a chessboard with random pieces anywhere is not really useful for the game of chess, because a lot of the configurations you could randomly come up with will never appear in any chess game. Now, there's this famous anecdote about a study where, you know, chess players have been tested on memorizing boards, and when it's some kind of chess-related configuration that might actually happen in the game or mimic some kind of opening, they can do it really easily.
I mean, you know, this is hitting this, which is defended by this, and you've got this pawn structure, which is very normal, and the bishop's here, and this knight is very important to remember, and I mean, they all just sort of fit together.
But if you put the chess pieces in any random order, their memory was no better than the average person. It's really interesting.
It's about as much as I remember.
So then the question is, well, what's the point? The point is, it's a great memory exercise, and it's kind of a cool little parlor trick to show how powerful the memory can be. All right, let's get started. So there's going to be two different approaches I'm going to cover in this video. The first one will be for absolutely anybody. I'll show you how to get it started. There's not really much prep you need. The second method will be a little more advanced. If you have a number system, I talk about this a lot in other videos. For those of you that do have a number system, go to this timestamp right now, and I'll show you another way to do this that takes advantage of your already set number system. Now, here are the broad strokes. What are we gonna do? Okay, so there are 32 pieces on this board, right? 16 on the black side, 16 on the white side. And a lot of them are mirror images of each other, right? There's pawns on this side, there's knights, rooks, bishops, king, queen, all that stuff. So what the goal is to come up with a picture and an action for each of these pieces, both black and white. And then when we want to memorize them, we're going to imagine this board, this 8x8, 64 location board, as a map to a real life memory palace. And I'll show you how to do that in just a moment. The first thing we need to do is come up with an image for all 32 pieces. Sounds difficult, but a lot of these are actually already some kind of very memorable image. So maybe we can play on that. All right, so as I said before, each piece is gonna have a person and also an action associated with it. I'll show you why when we start to use the memory palace. But for now, just follow along. So let's start with our kings here, the two biggest pieces on the board. We have the black and the white.
When I think king, I think immediately of King Kong. He's the king of gorillas and he's got black fur.
So he can be the black piece here, the king.
Since that's animal movie themed, then maybe I should choose Simba from The Lion King. He's the king and he's got a lighter shade of fur. So I have King Kong and The Lion King.
Now, a side note, whatever I come up with here, don't feel like you're obligated to keep the same. Feel free to write down your own. I'm just giving you some suggestions. And maybe for actions, I'll think of
him, he's pounding like a chest, so King Kong pounding, and the Lion King is roaring.
Okay. Next up, let's do the queens. All right.
Queen, I think of like a queen bee, since they're black and yellow, buzzing around. So maybe it's the queen bee.
She's the black queen.
And her action is making a buzzing sound. And then for the white queen, we can think of the Queen of England because she has white hair.
Maybe her action is sitting, because I imagine her just sitting on the throne. Bishops, all right. Bishop, I think of someone holy, maybe a priest, right? He kind of wears black attire, so he's the black piece. And then the white piece, maybe it's the Pope, right? He's always clad in white. Now for actions, maybe for the priest, I imagine him praying, right? Whatever that means to you or in your mind. And then for the white Pope, I imagine him waving, giving that Pope wave. All right, next up we have knights, the horses. They look like horses, so I think the most straightforward thing we could do is picture some kind of horse. So maybe the black will be like a black stallion kind of horse, and then maybe a white could be a unicorn horse, right? Because they're typically white. And they're quite distinct in that sense. Anyways, and for actions, maybe horse could be riding, because you ride a horse. And then a unicorn could be the action of flying, because unicorns fly. Next, we have the rooks, or the castles. So castle makes me think of like a medieval kind of Game of Thrones kind of thing. So maybe the black one could be an executioner. I just see this executioner all clad in black. He's got an axe, maybe. Maybe the white one could be like a knight. Shining white armor. And their actions, executioner, I think of him swinging down an axe blow, and then the knight here could be fighting with a sword. And then finally, we just have the pawns here, the smallest pieces on there, and yeah, there's a lot of them, but that's okay. Pawn sounds to me like prawn, so I think of like a shrimp or some kind of maybe sea fish, right? So pawn, prawn, fish, whatever. Some kind of black fish, maybe we could think, well, it's not a fish. I was gonna say an orca whale. I think it's a mammal. So whatever, that's some kind of aquatic animal. So we have an orca for the black one, and then for the white one could be our shrimp, okay, because they're kind of pink-white. And in terms of actions, for the orca whale, I just picture an orca swimming really fast in the ocean. Maybe for the shrimp, I think of the action of eating, because you eat shrimp. Okay. All right, now that you have your images, the next step is to figure out how to make this board a memory palace. So for now, let's clear the board. All right. And notice that we have 8 squares across, and 8 rows up. What you could easily do is have a memory palace with 64 locations and put something in each of them. Now the question is, well, what if it's empty, right? There's 32 pieces, 64 slots, half of those are going to be empty. So whenever something is empty, just don't put anything there. When you're going back through your memory palace and you don't remember seeing anything there, it means there was no piece there. Simple as that. Now, 64 items, that's a bit long, so we can do better than that. And that's where the action comes in. So what I'm going to do is every 2 squares is going to be a person action combo. And so that means that every row only needs 4 images. 4 times 8 rows, that's 32. So half the images now that you need instead of 64. Great. So if I have 2 pieces in consecutive squares, it would be the first one as a person, the second one as the action. And you make that into 1 image, put it on that location. And you continue down the board. You can go whatever direction you want. I like to start down closest to me from left to right and then work my way to the back of the board. Now there's 4 scenarios, right? There could be 2 pieces on a pair of squares. There could be 1 piece on the left one, that's the person, or there could be 1 piece on just the right, that would just be an action. And then there could also be none on either. None on either, you don't picture anything. Pieces on both, you do person action. If there's just a person, then you just picture the person. If there's just an action, you just picture a generic action happening to that thing. You don't have to specify who's doing it. And in the case of just a person, you don't have to specify what they're doing. They're just there. Sounds like a little complication, but it's really easy to visualize it that way. When you have 2 pieces that are a person and an action, it's very clear that there are 2 pieces there, a person and an action. And when there's just 1 piece on either one, it's very clear whether it's just a person or just an action. And obviously, if there's nothing there, it's very clear that there's nothing there. So I think the next logical thing is to do an example. All right, so we have this random setup here. I just randomly put all of those 32 pieces on this board. And as I said before, I would start in this bottom left corner and go row by row all the way until I reach the very end corner here, going in pairs. Now, to make my life a little easier so I can see each row, I'm going to make each row kind of its own little area in my memory palace. So the first location in my memory palace will be my dining room here, stopping at each of these 4 locations within the space. Then we go into kind of the entryway here, and I'll have 4 different locations in that spot as well. Then continue that same process for 6 more areas. Remember, you can use any memory palace you want. Doesn't really matter. And let's just go through an example here. So what would I see? So I start here with the first 2 images, and I have a white pawn in the person slot.
Okay, today I'm going to try to break this stuff down, simplify it. Today's podcast is titled Bruce's Beach Chess. Victimhood versus winnerhood, 619-768-2945. We're using the board game of chess and applying it to real life events, and I believe you can of the past as well as you can apply it to the present as well. Now, as I just played the audio in the board game of chess, the first thing that you must learn and eventually master if you want to get really good at it. But the first thing you must fundamentally, we're dealing with the fundamentals now, is you have to learn the board. The board represents the landscape. Now let's switch this over once again to Black Wall Street and Bruce's Beach. And Black Wall Street, the landscape, the board, was the state of Oklahoma. Remember now, we're playing chess, real life chess. If you don't know the landscape, you're going to end up becoming a victim. Now, once again, there were, in this, the example I'm using, there were 51, actually there were more than 51, but in the example I'm using right now, there were 51 black communities that black folks built. Actually, you know what? I'm going to up that up to 52. I'll give you the 52nd one in a moment here. 52. 50 of those black townships, 50 of those black communities were municipalities where black folks, some of them former slaves, got together and bought acres of land. You know, 200 acres, 600 acres, 1,000 acres, some as little as 100 acres, and started their own townships. This is 100 years ago. This is all in Oklahoma. Now, the 51st one I'm going to put out here as an example is Black Wall Street, also known as the Greenwood neighborhood, that was set up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And then the 52nd one is Blackjack, Oklahoma. Blackjack, Oklahoma, and I've been there about three times. Blackjack, Oklahoma is a non-incorporated community that is sandwiched right beside Taft, Oklahoma. You probably won't find anything online about Taft, but Taft is real. I've been there at least three times. Every time I go to, because it's right there. It's right next door, literally. Okay, but they never set up as a municipality. Okay, now once again, you have to know the board. Now, nothing has never happened to Blackjack racially, no violence, and the same with the other 50 black townships that you know that were on the board in 1921. Now, what did 51 of these communities do that Black Wall Street didn't do? Number one, they knew the board. They knew the landscape. They set up shop in places within the state of Oklahoma where the probability of racial violence was dramatically low or non-existent. And for 100 years, including right now in 2020, almost 2021, no racial violence has happened in any of those communities. O.W. Gurley, who bought that 40 acres, didn't know. He set up in Klan territory. He set up in hostile territory. It was bound to happen. In the chess game, know the landscape, know the board. The board in, and you know what? If you look at the board, the chess board in chess, you can look at each one of those squares as a county or a city. And that's why I say, to make this more real and practical, we shall be having game nights offline as well as offline with specialized chess boards that reflect real-life historical events and things that are going on right now so people can really grasp it, they get the visual on it. In the chessboard, you've got 64 squares. You can call it 64 territories. So looking at the state of Oklahoma, matter of fact, let me look it up right now. Let's see. Number of counties. Number of counties in Oklahoma. Okay, let's see what we have. All right, Oklahoma has 77 counties. Okay, that's the chessboard for the state of Oklahoma. 77 squares. Okay, so let's make this in line with the board game of chess. 64 squares instead of 77. The distinction between Black Wall Street, and that which was, well, we know what happened to it, and the other, the 51 plus other black communities at the time is the ones that have never been touched by racial violence. And for some reason, too many of us, we are a victimhood had, didn't know or don't know the landscape. Now, just because, now there's more to it than knowing the landscape, but you need to know the landscape. Let's play this next audio.
What is the highest number of possible chess games in 40 moves?
What do you think? 1,000? No, more. 1,000,000? No. What about 1,000,000? No. Then how many? Here's the answer. But how?
On average, at any position, there are about 30 legal moves which you can make.
30 times 30 times 30 and 35 times like that. That's for 40 moves. And that's how you get this number. Now, one famous quote.
The number of games of chess is greater than the number of atoms there are in the observable universe.
Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. See you soon.
Okay, today's podcast is titled Bruce's Beach Chess, Victimhood versus Winterhood, 619-768-2945. All right, number one, you need to know the landscape. What's on the board? All right, using the Oklahoma, all right, 77 counties, so that's, but we're going to make it even to 64 places. Black Wall Street, the founder of that, he didn't know the landscape. Yet there were over 51 other black communities that did know the landscape. Thus, no racial violence to this day. Next thing, following the game of chess and applying it to real life situations, are moves. Now, in the chess game, as you just heard, each possible move you make, there are 30 possible legal moves that you can make per move. I mean, you can only make one move, but you got 30 options. Typically, people with a victimhood mindset have, here are their moves. The blame game move, which that paralyzes you, you don't do anything. Or I'm going to call a police move, which doesn't pan out a lot of times. Or I'm going to go to the government move. Or let me call Jesse Jackson and let me call Al Sharpton. That's five moves. Once again, in the regular chess game, even a pawn has 30 possible options per move. You only pick one. But the problem is a lot of people don't, they get caught up with, well, once again, if you don't know the rules, you don't know the moves. If you don't know the landscape, you don't know what kind of moves you can make. That's all with a victimhood mindset. There are a total of, I got it right here, Okay, you got 64 squares, and then you got a maximum number of moves in a game, on average, is 5,898 moves. Let me come at it another way. David and Goliath, which is a, you know, symbolic and allegory story. On paper, Goliath had more options, dramatically more taller, had all these weapons, had a reputation. David, on the other hand, had probably about 3 to 5 options. He was real good at one of them with that slingshot. And he used it to knock the giant down. And then he rushed up to the giant and then used the giant's own weapon. He weaponized the giant himself and cut his head off. Black folks need to start thinking like David. Use what tools? Stop looking at the other person's tools. What tools do you already have? What kind of skills do you have that are better than the other opponent that you can use against them? And then how can you use what the other person has to weaponize it to use against them? Bruce's Beach Chess, Victimhood versus Winhood. Once again, there are over 5,000 moves. So here are the traditional moves that black folks have used on a critical mass basis in the United States. Now, mind you, we're supposed to be playing chess, not checkers. Number one, for the most part, we don't know the landscape. Number two, we don't know, and including the landscape is we don't know the rules. That's the law. Number two, we don't know what moves we can make. Other than, well, hold, here are the moves that we have historically used. Marching, that's one. Protesting, that's two. Calling the police, that's three. What else? Looking for a leader, that's number four. And I'm throwing Jesse Jackson, Martin Luther King, I'm throwing them all of them in that one. Number five, calling on Jesus. Those are the five major moves that out of the over 5,000 possible moves that you can make, we have, on a critical mass basis, used about five moves. That's not racism. That's not knowing the game. It's really that simple. Well, let's throw in the sixth move, victimhood. You got over 5,000 moves, and it's the same six moves on a critical mass basis, day after day. Nobody has enslaved you or oppressed you for 400 years. You just haven't applied the rules of the game for 400 years. Next thing is this, defense. Any of you who have played maybe high school football, high school basketball, there are rules, man. There's a playbook. What kind of defense, I mean, when you're playing football or basketball, okay, on the high school level or even middle school, junior high level, you know, you get out on that field, the landscape, and then you can look at the other team and see how they're setting up and you see what kind of offense that they might be coming at you at, and then you set up the appropriate defense. Well, in chess, there's a number of defenses. But if you don't have any if you're not even aware of the possible defenses, and a lot of defenses come by law. Okay. And there's a lot of defenses that come by de facto law. They're not on the books. But you need to know what's on the books and what's off the books. Once you need to know the possible but if you don't have no defense, if your only defense is Jesus, I feel sorry for you.
Hello friends, this is Dijin JS from Online Chess Lessons. Today we are going to look at the top 10 defenses for black. On number 10, we have the Russian system, or we call it as the Petrov defense. Starts out with pawn to e4, black has pawn e5, knight f3, knight f6. We can see that both knights are attacking the pawns on e4 and e5 of the opponent. The main line goes like knight into e5. In this position, the black knight has got a tendency to capture the pawn on e4. B captures, this is a big blunder. After queen e2, knight goes back to, say, nf6 again, then the discovered check. And we're gonna lose our queen. So, the best response from black after n into e5 is d3. The knight goes back to nf3 again. Then black knight is gonna capture the pawn on e4. Then queen comes to e2, queen e7, then d3, knight f6, queen captures queen. Bishop captures queen, bishop e2, castling. This Petrov defense is a drawish line actually. Both players play correctly. Not much attacking chances for black. On number 9, we have the Dutch defense. It starts out with pawn to d4, then plays f5. This is a very interesting move from black. Black actually trying to protect the square, preventing e4 push from the white side. And the main line goes like knight c3, pawn e6, supporting the pawn on f5. Then g3 from white, trying to bring this bishop into this long diagonal. Then nf6, getting more control over these two squares. So overall, this is a good defense for black. It's been played by most of the top level players. The world champion Magnus Carlsen plays this defense very often. So it's a very good defense for black. Next we have the Karakhan defense. Starts out with e4 and black responds c6. Then after d4, trying to control the center by the white pieces, then comes d5. Attacking the center from black. If white tries to hold the center, then he may play knight c3. Then black can simply capture the pawn on e4, knight recaptures. Then bishop f5, knight g3 attacking the bishop, then bishop g6. When we look at the black's position, black's light square bishop is well placed. And he's attacking this pawn on c2. And we can always attack this pawn on d4 by this e5 push. And this is going to be a good defense for black. On number 6, we have the French defense. Starts out with e4. Black's going to respond e6. Then after d4, d5, attacking the center. White may play e5. Then we're going to play c5. attacking the center pawn. Then if white captures, we're going to capture with bishop. And we analyze the position. We got a minor piece of bishop is developed and is holding this long diagonal and attaching this weak pawn near the king, which is going to be very good for black. Pawn number 6, we have the Alexandrian defense. Starts out with pawn to e4. Black's going to play knight f6. You can see now right away, black piece is attacking the e4 pawn. The main line starts out with pushing the pawn again to e5, chasing the knight. It's going to play in d5.
Okay, we really need a visual on that. But like I said, that's where we're setting up. We'll be setting up offline chess games designed actually to teach history and then how to even solve or take advantage of current present day opportunities in real time. So once again, today's podcast is titled Bruce's Beach Chess, Victimhood versus Winnerhood, 619-768-2945. Now that in that last audio, which is better, that's why we need it visual. You need some defenses. We need some defenses. The typical response when we hear about a situation like Bruce's Beach, it comes from a victimhood point of view, and victimhood is not a defense. It's not an offense. It's just you're just paralyzed. You're not doing anything. And I'm talking about what's happening right now. Now let's do a review of. Once again, and let's apply this to Bruce's Beach and even Black Wall Street. Even we can throw in Rosewood or any kind of victimhood story that you want to come up with. Now, let's go to Bruce's Beach. What did the landscape look like in Bruce's in California? That's where Bruce's Beach was formed. The landscape, we can look at it from two different angles in California. Bruce's Beach, which was a resort, here's what the landscape looked like on the county chessboard. In the state of California, there are 58 counties. 58 of them. Yet, some people are whining, bitching, and moaning 100 years later about one. 50 counties, know the board, know the landscape. Let's take this a step further. We're still on the landscape. We're still on the board. There are, in the state of California, 482 incorporated cities. Yet 100 years later, we're whining about Huntington Beach. We need to start thinking bigger. Pianchi sent me a couple of days ago? And I posted it yesterday. I don't have it on the scrolling marquee today. 200 black-owned and operated. It's a map. 200 black-owned and operated hotels right here in the United States. But week in and week out, month in and month out, year in and year out, it's the same victimhood stories. Rosewood, Black Wall Street, well, those are the two main ones. But nobody's talking about the 200 black-owned. It's probably more than that. I'm just saying that's a map. You can look that up right now. Just put in black hotel map. It'll pop up. 200 locations. But nobody, but we keep the two little pawns that we keep on playing on a critical mass basis is the victimhood pawns. Not knowing the possible 30 legal moves that we can make in any possible situation. The last principle I want to bring up before I open up the phone lines today with chess, and today's podcast is titled Bruce's Beach Chess. And this is something that I'm going to organize where we can play it online and offline. I'm going to have a board designed to take real life, the chess game, and apply it to real life events that happen or happening. That show it, because my point is, learn the game. And the what's the other thing that we come up with? People that are coming up with the white supremacy is they don't know the board. If you don't know the board, which is the landscape, if you don't know the rules, which is the law, you're going to end up a victim. If you don't know the possible move, no matter what, a pawn has a lot of rules, not rules, but potential. If you know the game, you can go from the pawn position to the other side of the board, and that pawn can become a queen, a rook, a knight, or a bishop. That does happen. Now, the last audio I'm going to play is on blind chess. Here's a person I want you to look up, and I want you to emulate if you can. Mangus Carlsen. Mangus Carlsen is a grandmaster of chess. In this audio that we're going to play from 60 Minutes, Carlsen Mangus is playing blind chess. What is blind chess? Blind chess is, in this audio I'm going to play, he's playing 10 people simultaneously. 10 people, 10 boards, and he's not looking at the board or the player. But he has memorized the landscape. He has memorized the board, knows, he keeps track of each move that each 10 of these players have played. That's blind chess. What has happened with African Americans on a critical basis in the United States is, on a critical mass basis, we don't even know the damn board, let alone playing blind chess. But we can, and some of us do know how to play it, but some of us don't. But I'm just saying, on a critical mass basis, and therefore, the only moves we got, if you want to call them moves, white supremacy, victimhood, the blame game, calling a governmental agency, calling the police, or calling on Jesus. Six moves out of over 5,000 possible moves. No, I forgot one, rioting. Seven moves out of a possible 5,000.
Booty, getra.
Just look at what he's doing. Competing against 10 players simultaneously. That in itself is not extraordinary, but Magnus cannot see the boards. He's facing the other way. So he has to keep track of the positions of 320 pieces blind. And the number of possible moves? Infinite. Magnus comes out on top.
It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Do you have any idea how extraordinary this looks to...
No, it's one of the amazing things in chess that you can you don't really need a board, you can just keep it.
But it transcends chess. I mean, I just can't fathom what you've just done. It seems like it's supernatural.
Okay. Like I said, I got to get with an artist or whatever. We design a board, a chess board, so we can play out some of these, like, see, these real life events in the past as well as real life events that are going on now, including a chess gentrification board. Matter of fact, if you got a visual of a chess board right now, if you look at the middle of the board, there's a number of squares. Matter of fact, that's what really chess is. You can look at is how can one side gentrify the other side? What moves are you going to make to gentrify the other side? That's another way to look at chess. If you hear squealing in the background, we're babysitting a little puppy. We got three dogs running around here. One's a puppy. Anyway, but I don't have any control over that one. All right. And anyway, Bruce's Beach Chess, and like I said, we'll be revealing. We'll be coming out with a chess board where we're going to take historic events like Black Wall Street, Bruce's Beach, and then contemporary settings where you can look, take a situation and playing the game of chess with a specialized chess board and pieces, you can, but by applying the exact same rules of chess, we're not making up any new rules. We're using the exact same rules, the exact same number of boards, but you know, the pieces will look different, and then the board will look a little. It'll be the same number of squares, but we're using those rules already. How can we look at this differently? Like, say, before I go to the phone lines, the chess board has 64 spaces or 64 spots. The state of Oklahoma. Has 77 counties. All right. Black Wall Street set up in the wrong county with advanced information. It wasn't like they were surprised. They just basically, what did the 51 plus other communities do? Where did they set up on the board that Black Wall Street didn't? And then when I went out to Oklahoma to some of these black towns, I mean, in 2020, if you don't know where you're going, I don't know. Man, I don't even know how they found these places to set up towns 100 years ago, but they did. And those towns are still standing. But they knew the landscape. The other example is Bruce's Beach. Once again, the state of California, let's look at this from two different boards. Board number one, there are 55 counties in the state of California. Bruce's Beach could have made a chess move by just moving to one of the other remaining 54 counties where they could have rocked and rolled in peace. Yet 100 years later, we got people playing the victimhood card or the victimhood move, which just victimhood, you just bitch, moan, and complain and don't do anything. The other board, the other landscape is, there are over 400 and, hold on, let me get the exact number. And this is incorporated places. I'm not even talking about. There are 482 incorporated cities and towns in California. Now, if we include the non-incorporated, it's probably double or triple that. But we're just going by the ones that are, you know, that are incorporated. 482. So here in 2020, about to be 2021. We have people, and that's what I'm saying, racism has nothing to do with this. If you don't know the game, see, that's another, you're not, anyway. 400, you got 482 towns. okay, if things are not going well in one of those towns, in this case Manhattan Beach, then you got 481 other possibilities to move. It's chess, people, not checkers. It's chess and not racism. It's chess and not white supremacy. It's as simple as that. That's why I got to come out with the specialized chessboard. And we'll be setting up this innovative way to play chess on a regular. Because those, I counted a total of about 7 moves. Those 7, you know what? The other side of the table knows, you know what? Well, if I'm going up against this opponent, here are their moves. Marching, protesting, all with no defense now. Marching, protesting, praying to Jesus, calling on Jesse Jackson, just calling on some leader. Oh, rioting, that's 5. We got 5 to 7 moves, that's it. Oh, calling on the government and calling police. That's the playbook on a critical mass base of African Americans in the United States. Not even contemplating there are over 5,000 more possible moves you can make. And that's why shit happens on a regular, consistent basis. Now, some of the moves that we've made historically, okay, the Underground Railroad. The Underground Railroad was a chess move. It was a chess move. Matthew Henson, the original Uncle Tom, and not in the Uncle Tom in the context that we misuse that term to Uncle Tom today, because that was really Sambo. See, we don't even know we don't even got the name straight. Matthew Henson, he made a chess move prior to the Underground Railroad, the precursor to the Underground Railroad. He made his way to Canada and helped form two communities. Well, actually, one community, then he helped set that up. You know, they set up trade schools for slaves that were coming into Canada. That's another chess move, becoming independent, growing your own food, building your own structures. These are all chess moves, starting your own business. It's a chess move. In some of these black townships in Oklahoma today, they have their own, they got their own governments, another chess move. Got their own judges, another chess move. Can't, if you don't know the landscape, the chances of you winning anything is practically zero. Oh, you know what another one I'm throwing in? Reparations. That's 8. Now, that move hasn't even worked yet. Unless it's do-it-yourself reparations, which is another chess move, because, last week we talked about Frank McWhorter, former slave who bought his own freedom. That's a chess move. Bought the freedom of his family, another chess move. Moved to another square on the board when he went to Illinois. That's another chess move. He bought anywhere from 40 to 80 acres of land. Another chess move. He started his own township, New Philadelphia, Illinois. Another chess move. Checkers is victimhood. Checkers is whites believing in white supremacy. Checkers is marching and protesting. 619-768-2945. I'm getting off my soapbox, but this is top priority. We're putting together a Bruce's Beach, matter of fact, even a Black Wall Street chessboard. We might even come up with a Monopoly, our own version of a Monopoly set on this. Because I think by taking these games that are established, particularly chess, so we can increase our thinking, increase our vision. Okay, this looks like a tight situation, possibilities. Once again, a pawn, each move has got 30 possible moves. They can only make one. They can only select one. But past those seven or eight that I just named, and that's why we get some of us, and I ain't one of them, get hypnotized by, and you know what? This has always existed. Trace this over back to the Africa. War strategy. It all comes down to chess. Anyway, that's my take on it. Let's go to the phone lines. 314, your mic is open.
Hello, L.A. How are you today?
I can't complain.
You know, I don't have much to say because you pretty much covered everything and things that I never expected. But the number of locations that I gave you, it was not only hotels, but also resorts, especially along the sea coastlines.
Yeah, there were quite a few.
And also bread and breakfasts.
Oh, well, you can include them. That number's going to go beyond 200.
Yeah, I couldn't count them all. But
yeah,
those are all black-owned, from what I can tell. Of course, there's a lot of them throughout the country. Even Hebrew Israelites own one in Texas. But these people were not deterred by the things that you mentioned. That some people, for whatever reason, just seem to just can't let it go, like the song says.
Well, that's true. And people, anybody can come and call and dispute it, but some folk, in my opinion, and I'm entitled to it, some black folk think that we have the exclusive rights on victimhood. Which,
and they think that they have
sense.
The exclusive right to explain what that is and how it looks. They think that they have the exclusive right to lecture and be paid, pass the hat around, get $20. They've been charging $20 for the last 40 years. They must not experience no inflation. But they think that they have the exclusive right to write books on it and peddle it at these meetings and lectures. They think that they have the exclusive right to tell those that there's something wrong with their minds and they sleep, need to be woke up. And
that's true.
And that they are the ones that's supposed to describe to them what it is that's causing all this. And then it usually is blaming it on the white man and some tenants. And some flag called racism, white supremacy, and all. But anyway, I'm going to get off right now because I don't need that.
Okay. Well, we went 31 minutes over yesterday, so we might end a little bit early today. But, I'm glad you, like I say, for people listening, if you go to, I guess if you type in any search engine, black resorts or black hotel map, that'll pop up. And like you mentioned, there are 200, and if you include bed and breakfast and all this, it'll surpass. it'll probably double that number if you include bed and breakfast. But and you know what? That map is a good illustration of, like you say, a lot of those are in coastal situations. So geographically speaking. So, in any event, okay, we're going to end it early today because, like I said, yesterday we went like 31 minutes over. So everybody have a good rest of the day. We're going to give you an update on Bruce's Beach Chess and Black Wall Street Chess tomorrow.